Welcome to Sunshine Sisters, an interview segment focusing on the women making an impact in St. Petersburg today. I'm Karen Carmichael. My guest today is Beatrice Farrell. Beatrice was the executive director of the Deuces Live. Prior to joining Deuces Live, she worked in banking, loan, and financial services for nearly 25 years. She has been honored to receive the 2020-2021 Gathering of Women's Men and Women of Distinction Community Building and Public Service Award, the City of St. Petersburg 2021 Sunshine Ambassador Award, and she was nominated for the 2022 St. Petersburg Chamber Good Burger Award. Currently, Beatrice is Director of the Digital Inclusion Project, which is part of the Community Foundation of Tampa Bay. Beatrice, welcome to Sunshine Sisters.
Thank you, Karen, so much for the invitation.
Tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. For those who know this, it's a Circle City. It is where the Indianapolis 500 has been operating for more than 100 years.
How did you end up in St. Petersburg?
I went to Florida A&M University. And after I was here for 4 years, as most Midwesterners, I lamented that the seasons were not changing, and I wanted to move back to the Midwest. And I lived in Michigan for about 7 years. And one day I could not get up an incline, a block long incline going to the office. And I said, I'm never going to live where it snows again. I came back to Florida. I had an opportunity to either go to Miami or to Tampa. And Tampa and Indianapolis are alike in a lot of ways, in so much that they are large cities that have a small town feel. So that's what led me back to Florida after I left FAMU. Go Rattlers.
What inspired you to get involved in St. Pete? Because clearly you've been involved in a lot of different things here.
When I was young, I was a Girl Scout. And when I came to FAMU, I was the first semester, I was a deputy registrar. So I was registered, for those who don't know, that's when you register people to vote. And so I've always been a volunteer. I think it was Shirley Chisholm who said, service is the rent you pay for being on this earth. So I've always been one to be engaged in volunteerism.
Do you see any challenges in St. Pete in 2024 and moving forward?
I think the biggest challenge that we have is immersing people who move to St. Pete into the culture. And what I mean is we have this incredibly local vibe. And we have to remember that it's that local vibe that made St. Pete famous. And we just have to remind people when they move here that local is supreme in the city of St. Petersburg. And a lot of people don't really understand what that means. And what it means is that we're always looking to our neighbors first, before we look outside. And as someone who's been here for maybe close to 30 years in the St. Pete area, I understand how it feels to come in and you're outside and you want to always reference things that you used to do where you used to live. And to all those people, I would just suggest that you say, well, now that I'm at St. Pete, I have a good idea that it's an idea that I'm implanting from somewhere else. But if we always focus on what keeps St. Pete great, then I think that we'll be okay. That I believe, is the biggest challenge of keeping St. Pete local.
So tell us about an accomplishment that you're proud of.
This may sound odd, but there's two. Personal is the best accomplishment, or there's two. I have two daughters who are 26 and 25, the 26 and 25. Those are the best accomplishments of my life. Then, you know, secondly, it's work stuff.
Well, it's always great to raise kids to take care of themselves. Anybody who can raise kids to take care of themselves deserves a pat on the back.
I don't talk about them a lot because they don't like me to talk about them. But since it's just I'm in the sister circle. Those are the two biggest accomplishments of my, those are the thing, those are what I'm most proud of. I am most proud of my daughters. And at work, actually what I, from a work accomplishment, what I'm most proud of, because I can see it every day, if I wanted to, is the Deuces Corner Park on the corner of 9th and 22nd Street. It used to be a vacant lot. Prior to that, it was a funeral home, Sanchez Funeral Home, which has a new location on, I think it's 62nd Avenue South. But we had a vacant lot that we, when we say we, of course the city paid for it, but with a lot of community involvement. And so it's anchors. We actually, there's two community parks. There's one on 5th and 22nd, and there's one on 9th and 22nd, and it anchors the murals underneath the underpass. And the murals underneath the underpass, when we, now it's time for maintenance. When they were first done, we would tell people it's a love letter from the Deuces Live to the community. It's four murals done by Carlos. His name is Zulu Warrior. That's his paint name, but I wanted to say his real name, because he's a twin and I'm a twin, so I always got to give a shout out to the twin. It was a love letter to the community, and it was an instance where something that initially was for not good, if you read any history books or anything about infrastructure, the African American community, most of the African American communities in the United States were destroyed by the interstate system. Underpasses were a bad thing, because that's what led to the decline of the neighborhoods, because no longer did you have enough people to support the businesses, because that was destroyed. And so if you look at a decline in a neighborhood, anywhere that there were interstates went through it, that's a typical decline. And that's one of the stories that are not told. So when we redid the underpass, it was taking something that wasn't good and saying, so we're going to make it something special. And it's now in between these two parks that sort of bring the neighborhood. So when you're driving through, we had a mayor that was like, he wanted to create a seamless city. And when we talk about that, what we don't talk about is what has to happen in order to say that you have a seamless city, and it's infrastructure. And oftentimes when we talk about redevelopment, we don't include infrastructure. So if you don't have underground light poles, if your electricity lines are over on the top and they're not underground, that's why a lot of people suffer. They didn't have electricity because the electricity lines were exposed. So you had people 25 years ago that made sure our infrastructure started because the lines were put underneath. And so now we have new water and sewer lines. So in addition to the parks, where you can see the infrastructure improve. So if we look at what I'm most proud of from a work standpoint, historically, it would be the improvement of infrastructure on 22nd Street South.
Nice. So do you have a mentor?
I have several, and actually too many to name, because if I say one, then I will ultimately miss one. But I will say the board members from when I was at the Deuces, the sisters in my sorority that were younger and older, the graduates of the absolute best university in the world, Florida A&M, younger and older. When I look at history and I look at people who did things that at the time seemed impossible, the bus riders of Selma, they are an inspiration, because what history teaches us is that when you have movements, they are usually done by groups of people who in the history books remain nameless. So we don't know who all those people are. We look at the people who marched in St. Petersburg, who made sure that we now have a call program. The hundreds, maybe thousands of people in the streets who made that happen, those are the people that I look up to.
people.
The brave people. The brave people who understand that history may not know their name, but for the students of history, we know that they were there.
What do you like about your job?
So now I have, after I left the Deuces, and I tell people I didn't leave the Deuces, I moved over. As the director of digital inclusion, my role is to increase the knowledge about digital literacy and why it's so important. And it's that I love my job because I know what happens when people, number one, get it, and number two, work to make sure that everybody is digitally literate or at least has access to it. When we talk about, I remember when the internet first started and people were saying this is a way for individuals to really, it was a way to equalize society because you could at home, you have the ability to sell things and become, that could be your a living.
Yeah, you're an entrepreneur.
So, you know, we look at Amazon now, but there were hundreds of little mini Amazons because you could start an online store that said Karen's St. Pete Books. Mm-hmm. And if you had all the, now you could get access to all the books that were written about St. Petersburg from everywhere. And if you bought at least 40 of them, they would be 40 to 60% cheaper than buying one. So you could look at the margin and you could do all that and you could drop ship them. So you could make a living doing what you liked, an online store from your bedroom. Mm-hmm. And especially when the internet first started, that was a way for people to generate income by something and it didn't have a large investment. And when we say large, that's a relative term because you needed to have the internet. But it did allow people to sort of, if they didn't have a lot of money and but they were very creative, you could make a living. You have the Etsy store. So there's a way for people who may not have historically, they don't may not have a college degree, or maybe they have one in something else. But we look at how the internet has changed how people can generate a living. And I think that's one of the things that I like about my job, because encouraging people who don't have access to the internet or understanding what they can do with access to the internet can change the trajectory of people's lives. 20 years ago, what did we call people who were online and sold stuff? We didn't have a name for it.
Right. Even the term brick and mortar, we didn't understand that term either.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we didn't call it brick and mortar because mm-hmm. all the stores are brick and mortar, so right. It didn't have a name. But you have people who have online stores, individuals who that is the best way for them to sell their craft without a middleman. And there's a lot of people who do that. Or they put it in stores where there is no such thing as a middleman. So if we look at how the internet has exploded, I think it's important. That's why I love my job, because it's an opportunity for people to make a living where the opportunities are not limited to where they live physically.
What does a typical work day look like for you?
So I work a lot of places. I technically have, you can find me at one of three offices depending upon the days. I am actually an employee of Pinellas Education Foundation. The initiative, Digital Inclusion, is housed at Community Foundation of Tampa Bay. And Monday, Wednesday, and every other Thursday, I work in the Innovation District, which is downtown St. Pete, because the Innovation District and Deuces Live this month, I was the executive director, they started, if you will. They were the impetus of digital inclusion.
Do you travel much?
For my job, no. But I will be spending more time in St. Louis because one of my major accomplishments lives there. And I have friends my brother lives in Las Vegas. And my family, I have a lot of family still in Indianapolis. But I'd like to go to Egypt and see the ancient pyramids. If I got a chance to travel, second is the Vatican, because I'm Catholic, I'm Roman. I was baptized Catholic.
Everybody needs to go to Rome. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
all
I need
Catholics
to.
Go to Rome.
Yeah, I mean, I need to just staying in that, what I think is 10 point square miles, and just put my foot in. It's like, okay, maybe. And I understand the Pope says a mass every Monday. So maybe if I can hear a mass said by the Pope, I think that would be good.
Do you read? Listen to podcasts?
I like to read. Yeah. And right now I'm reading a book called Digitally Invisible, How the Internet is Creating the New Underclass. I mean, as great as the internet is, I think alone, it has the ability to either expand the digital and economic and income gap or shrink it. Right now, one of the challenges of people who historically have been excluded or under-resourced, communities that have been under-resourced, is the cost of internet. There was a program, the Accessible Connectivity Program, that was an incredibly popular in Congress. It came out of, COVID, because that's when I think a lot of people realized that the internet is no longer a luxury. 10 years ago, there's conversations that had started to be had on a federal level is about whether or not internet should be a utility. You look at, if you move into a house now, it has to have water and has to have electricity and it has to have a way to keep you warm, either gas or you have electric. So we already have utilities that because our community, our society says, in order to live in a home that we consider, in order to live in a home, it has to have electricity and it has to have water. If not, it's not really a home. Now, the question we have to ask ourselves, does that also include internet? And myself or anyone who works in this industry will tell you, yes. There are so many things that you cannot do without the internet, that it's almost, our society demands that you have it. And especially now when we look at what happened when people didn't have it when there was a hurricane. I mean, people were saying, I didn't have water, I didn't have electricity, nor did I have internet. So we all already refer to it as something that it's a must have. And we use it whether we recognize it or not. If you have streaming, if you do any streaming at all, that is considered internet access.
It is. And it's interesting. There are still digital immigrants. I consider myself a digital immigrant, right? Whereas my grandson's a digital native. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even understand that there are television shows that are only on at a certain time and a certain night. I've seen that because his family was part of a hurricane mess. And him and my daughter are living with me now. And I'm watching him watch television. And he's like, well, let's just watch Ghosts, for instance. And I'm like, you know, the episode's not on until Thursday night. He looks at me like, what does that even mean?
Right, right.
You know, Thursday night.
What do you mean I have to wait? Yeah. I can't binge. No. Yeah. So it comes out once a week.
Yeah. But they don't get it.
No. You know? Yeah. No. I mean, and I think about, I'm 61. I think about when I was in high school and ATM machines came out, my mother wouldn't use it. What do you mean you won't go to the bank and get $20 out? Because, you know, you'd been socialized to use the bank. But I couldn't understand why you would stand in line and get money when you can just walk up to a machine and get it. But it's all socialization. I was at a seminar earlier this year, and when we talk about adopting digital tools, we had a question. The participant said, okay, how long do you think that it took people, 100 million people, to use cell phones? And it was like 7 years. It took 100 million people to get cell phones. Then she asked, how long did it take 100 million people to get Facebook? All these answers, the response was 2.9 years. Then she said, how long do you think it took people to sign up for ChatGPT? People were like, a year, 2 years. She's like, they were estimating, because it wasn't there, they were estimating 90 days.
Wow.
So the speed at which adaptability of these new technology is so much faster. And what that leads to is a widening of the digital divide. Right now, we haven't come up with a better term because there's so many people who don't have the internet. And it's actually what this book is about, Digitally Invisible. It's written by Nicole Turner Lee. It talks about how it's creating a new underclass. Mm. Because what can't you do if you don't have internet at home?
And that's a lot. There's a lot of things that you can't.
You can't. There's some. There's school you can't go to. Mm-hmm. There is doctor visits you can't attend. Mm-hmm. And there are people in your life that you can't communicate. Because sometimes talking to somebody in another country online is cheaper than talking to them on the phone. Now you can do it if you download some of the, I think, Skype. Mm-hmm. Or if you have internet, I mean, if you have iPhone, you have the iPhone FaceTime. And mm-hmm. So you can do those in Messenger. My children were in Costa Rica and it was like, okay, so we'll keep in touch through Messenger because then we don't have to use a phone, which was $10 a day to have access. Wait, you've been gone more than 5 days. Yeah, it's kind of expensive. But if people are wondering, or your listeners are wondering, what is a good book to read? And this is quasi not controversial, so it could be in the libraries. Mm-hmm. It's called Digitally Invisible, How the Internet is Creating the New Underclass, Nicole Turner Lee. Because when we talk about digital inclusion, we talk about the skills to use a device and internet at home.
Tris, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me in the studio today.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. And I look forward to listening to all the other interviews that you have all the Sunshine Sisters who have been and talk about what they do. So thank you very much for the invitation.
You've been listening to Sunshine Sisters. My guest today was Beatrice Farrell. I'm Karen Carmichael. Thanks for listening.